before they get in here. My name's Brock McMillan. I'm the new chair of this rack, and I'm probably going to fumble through a lot of things tonight. So if you guys would just be patient with me, I'd really appreciate it. I'll take criticism out behind the building afterwards. So we'll start with rack introductions. And so we have a couple new rack members. So for those new rack members, Eric and Scott, and maybe that's it that's here. There's three, but I think two are here right now. Maybe tell a little bit about yourself and who you represent, and we'll start over here with Ben.
Ben Louder, Public at Large.
So I'm Scott Jensen, Public at Large as well. New RAC member, married, father of eight. I work for the research branch of the Forest Service here in Provo. That's about it.
Perfect. We'll go back to Danny, please. Introduce yourself.
Dan Potts, outdoor interests. No, it's actually non-consumptive interests, but I eat everything. So.
Okay, AJ.
AJ Maurer with Agriculture.
Ken Strong, Sportsman's Rep.
Eric Reed, Bureau of Land Management, from down in Fillmore. Enjoy the outdoors and married with a couple of kids, and I guess that's about it.
Paul Gaucher with the Forest Service. I'm the acting district ranger here in Spanish Fork on an interim basis. They'll have that job permanently filled here next couple of months, and then we'll have a different member at that time, but glad to be here. I live in Orange. My wife lived there about 20 years, and I have about 32 years in with the Forest Service.
Excellent. Okay, as you all know, this is a public forum, and the purpose is to allow all of you to express your opinions and proposals on the management of wildlife in the state. As such, I encourage everybody to participate in the process. Your input's important so that we can make management decisions and recommendations to the Wildlife Board. All the RAC members, I know I've been on the RAC for almost 2 years now, and we'll consider your comments and opinions. We all have our own ideas and opinions about what's best, and we approach this. Everybody has tremendous passion and emotion for wildlife. I'd ask that everybody be respectful to everybody else, even those with opposing views. I'd appreciate everybody in the audience keeping their emotions in check. I don't need to go through all this. You know what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. For each agenda item, the DWR will present maybe 10 to 15 minutes on the topic. They'll make their recommendation. At that time, we'll open it up to the RAC for questions. When the RAC has asked their questions, we'll open it up to the general public to ask their questions. That first time there is for questions only. So if you have questions about the presentation or about data or something like that, you come up and you ask questions. After the questions are all answered, then there'll be a time for comments. If you want to make a comment on any of the recommendations, you need to have filled out one of these cards and have it up here so we have a record of that comment. You'll be allowed up to 3 minutes if you're an individual, or up to 5 minutes if you're representing a group. And so you can come up and make comments. After that time, the RAC will have comments and discussion, and we'll vote on whatever is being presented. When you do come up, please state your name and state whether you're representing yourself or you're representing a group. After it's closed, after everybody's had their comments and their questions, we'll close it and we'll vote. Any other questions from anybody? Okay, I'll turn the time over to, next, approval of the agenda. Anybody make Ben makes a motion and a second. Any comments or additions? All in favor of the agenda? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Perfect. Thank you very much. A Wildlife Board update. I should have had this open. The last Wildlife Board, there were several things. One was the wild turkey transplant list. The motion was accepted as presented, and it passed the Wildlife Board unanimously. There was a collection, importation, and possession rule, Rule 657.53, about herpetology. There was a lot of discussion and input from the public. The motion was accepted as presented and passed unanimously. There was a rule amendment to Rule 657-12, statute change, discount for hunting and combination licenses for disabled veterans. The motion was accepted as presented, and it was passed unanimously. And there was an election of new chair and vice chair to the Wildlife Board, and Byron Bateman is the new chair, and Kevin Albrecht was elected as the new vice chair of the Wildlife Board. And I believe that's all I have. Does anybody else have anything that I missed? Okay, I'll turn the time over to Jason to give a regional update.
All right, thanks, Brock. I appreciate that. My name is Jason Vernon. I'm the regional supervisor here for the Central Region. First of all, I'd like to welcome you to our new facility here. This will be the first rack held in the building. We moved in at the 1st of July this year. We're really excited to have a nice building to be in, especially if you ever had been at the previous building. This is a huge step forward, and we're just excited, and we'd like to welcome you here. Just a little house cleaning really quickly. Restrooms are down the hall, which is out the door to the left, and just follow the hall all the way around. And there is Wi-Fi in here, CapNet. If you're looking for Wi-Fi, you're able to hook into that as well. So just welcome. It's good to have you here. Welcome our new RAC members as well. Thank you for your time and putting efforts into this committee. It's much appreciated. I've got a bit of a list of things I'd like to share with the RAC this afternoon, this evening. I'll try to get through them quickly. For a wildlife section, earlier this month they were able to complete elk surveys. They've been working on those throughout the entire month and spent quite a bit of time up on the Wasatch this year as a group conducting elk surveys, and those were completed. Antelope surveys are coming up in the next couple of weeks out on the West Desert, so biologists will be out there surveying for antelope. One thing that's kept our region busy this entire spring / summer has been bears. Since at least mid-May, if not earlier, we've had a nuisance bear call nearly every day, if not multiple calls on different bears every day. Been really busy. They've been setting lots of traps, trying to catch those bears and get them out of there. A lot of the calls have been dealing with garbage, bears coming into trash cans, whether it's on the mountain where people are keeping a dirty camp, and bears coming in to get into trailers. Campgrounds, either designated or dispersed campgrounds, have been hit pretty heavily. In some of the mountainous areas where we have homes, like in Park City and up some of the canyons, the bears have been getting in those garbage cans as well. A couple of things that might explain that are last year's really dry summer and bears going into the winter perhaps a little more hungry than they have in the past and had not built up their fat reserves, and then coming out this spring into a really wet winter, high snowpack, and not being able to get up high into the mountains early, as well as not having the food availability right off the bat. On top of that, we have really healthy bear population, increasing bear population right now. So all those things combined have created a situation where we have bears increasingly come in contact with humans. So it's kept us really busy, and I'm sure we'll be talking about that at a later RAC meeting for the bear racks. Our aquatic section, wanted to report that kokanee fishing has been really hot this summer, especially at Jordan L right now. They're knocking them dead up there. Strawberry's been doing really well. It might be cooling down a little bit, but it's still really good time to be out fishing for kokanee. We've got lots of pictures of people with lots of fish, which is really great. It's really satisfying for us. I think you'll remember last year we had some large fires in the south end of the valley up in the mountains, and our aquatics crew is working on post-fire stream rehab on some of those streams. Recently, like probably today and a couple days ago on Highway 89, we had some big debris flows coming out of some of those canyons across Highway 89 and closed the canyon down, the road down there. So just additional challenges for our aquatics staff on getting those systems back up and running again. Just kind of a note, Utah Lake, over the last several years, we continue to see advisories for algae blooms. Again, this summer we have advisories. Lincoln Beach has a danger advisory, so Lincoln Beach is actually closed, and they've recommended you stay out of the water, don't even go there. And the remainder of the lake is under a warning advisory, which is basically don't swim or water ski, don't get in the water at all. It doesn't affect the fish. They recommend that you clean the fish well and of course, discard anything you don't want to keep there. And one of those things we continue to run into, which I think makes some of the boating, recreational boating on Jordanelle and Deer Creek, more pressure up in those areas. From our habitat crew, I mentioned the flooding on Highway 89 at Thistle. We do have some WMAs, wildlife management areas up there, so we've been looking to see how that erosion has affected our wildlife management areas, especially from the Pole Hollow fire, but the Dairy Creek fire as well. With the heavy snow loads this last winter, they've been spending a lot of time repairing guzzlers. All that snow load on top of the guzzlers has damaged the aprons that collect the water and run them down into the drinkers. So they spent a lot of time fixing those. And then with the changes in the dedicated hunter rule last year, we have a lot of dedicated hunters coming through that are trying to get their, they need 8 hours the first year before they can receive their tag. So all of the new dedicated hunters are scrambling and coming in to get their hours taken care of. And so we've been really fortunate and taking advantage of those hours and have a lot of projects out there, a lot of good projects that they're contributing to. Our law enforcement, in June, our law enforcement section held a checkpoint at Strawberry Reservoir. You may have seen some of this in the news. Basically to stop vehicles that have been fishing on the reservoir. They stopped 254 vehicles coming through the checkpoint, estimated 762 people and about 300, almost 400 license checks. They seized 47 fish and issued 30 citations. So it was really successful on our end and an opportunity to educate the public on what slot limits are, and especially the limitations there on the lake. Just kind of as note, one of the pretty neat things I think they did was of all the fish they seized were donated to the food bank in Heber City. So those didn't go to waste. We have a new officer in our region. Our officers are split into districts, and we've had several districts that have been vacant for quite a while. Ethan Justinger is our new officer. He'll be in our Heber City, Park City District, Heber Valley District. I recently graduated from post, is in field training right now. We're extremely pleased to have him and excited to have him on with us up in Heber Valley. And finally, for law enforcement, you may have seen some news releases throughout the state where we're starting to build up a canine program. One of our officers in our region, Officer James Thomas, received a puppy just a couple weeks ago, and we're excited that we'll have a canine program in our region now. It's a puppy right now. It still needs to grow before it gets its training in, but we're excited in a year from now that we'll have a trained canine in our region, and hopefully we'll be able to bring it in to one of our RAC meetings, and you can meet our canine. For our conservation outreach, quite a few events coming up. The summer's been really busy with fishing at community fisheries and those types of events. Some that are coming up include a field dressing event in September. It'll be across the street at our facility on the other side of the street. That'll be September 19th. And then, as always, we have a Kokanee Salmon Viewing Day up at Strawberry Visitor Center at Strawberry Reservoir. And that'll be on Saturday, September 21st, October, September 21st. So we're excited about that. And unless there's any questions from the rack, I'll end with that. Brock? Ken?
I got a question. What was the outcome of the lady that seen the lion the other day on North University? I don't know if you caught that on the news.
I caught that on the news. That was never reported to us, so the outcome was a really nice picture of a cougar on a road in Provo.
But you have no idea whatever, or anything other than that?
No, we received the information too late to be able to go and track it or try to follow it or anything like that. But, you know, it's just another example of the urban wildlife-urban interface that we have here. We're going to be living with bears and cougars and moose and all those types of things wandering into towns. And, you know, the sooner we can get that information from the public, the faster we can get out there and investigate those types of things. But pretty interesting that those things happen. And we always love to see those pictures as well. So any other questions? All right, thank you.
Thank you, Jason. I guess it's Darren's turn. We're already to our recommendations, so Darren will start with fur bear and bobcat recommendations. Darren's the mammal coordinator for the state of Utah, for those that don't know.
All right. Appreciate the opportunity to present tonight. I'll be talking a little bit about our fur bear recommendations and also our recommendations for cougars in the state. We'll start with the fur bears. And if I can pick up, oh, it's on that other screen. Just got to figure out where it goes. There we go. No, we're good. I just had to get the cursor on the computer and not on the screen.
Darren, while you're getting that ready to go, quick question. I went to the RAC webpage today and was looking at meeting materials and happened to click on a link that was a video of you giving this presentation.
Yeah, maybe we
are. Are we starting to put that out on the...
Yeah, that's a good point. One thing we made... Jason, did you want to address that?
I can address that. I meant to address that. So that's a great question. So moving forward, beginning with this RAC, to get more information from the public, all of the presentations are going to be pre-recorded about a week before the RAC meeting and put on our website. So everybody will be able to go on our website, click on the presentation. Darren will give the same presentation here as he gave on the web, on that video, and then members of the public will have an opportunity to email questions or comments in to the regional supervisors when I can share those with the RAC as well. So just another opportunity for public to provide input to our process. So thank you. I appreciate you bringing that up.
Yeah, so if you watch that video and you scroll down below the window the video plays in, all the regional supervisors' emails are provided, and people can email up to noon the day of the RAC to the regional supervisor with comments if they'd like. Okay, so moving on to our bobcat fur bear recommendations for the 2019-2020 season. Just quickly, I want to go through how we manage bobcats in the state of Utah. Bobcats are managed according to a management plan, and that plan identifies three metrics that we look at when we're making decisions about opportunity to take bobcats. The first of the three are the number of juveniles in the harvest. The target in the plan is between 42% and 56%. The plan identifies an optimum amount of permits, season dates, that are available to the public when we meet our parameters. And so 6 permits per person would be the top end. The season dates are fairly generous. And then there's no cap on the total number of permits that can be issued if we're meeting all of our management criteria. So in this case, we want to see high numbers of juveniles in the harvest, that would indicate that reproduction is taking place and that the bobcat population is probably increasing. If we see it go below 42%, we're probably seeing bobcats follow a fairly almost biology 101 predator-prey pattern, and then when prey numbers drop, bobcat numbers drop, and that's pretty much like clockwork. And so we anticipate that that's going to happen, and the plan then adjusts opportunity based on when those cycles occur. So here's the data since 1999 on that parameter, juveniles in the harvest, and you can see that cycling that I talked about. The red dashed line is the lower bound of the management window that we're shooting for. And again, we don't want to see the number drop below that. When it does drop below that, as it inevitably will through time, that we'd make permit adjustments and other adjustments. The green line there is just the top end of the bound of the target window. You can see that this year we dropped below our management, lower management parameter at 42% juveniles in the harvest. The second management criteria is adult survival. We estimate adult survival using a statistical method that helps us to estimate the percent of adults that survive year to year based on our harvest information. People have to, if they harvest bobcats, have to bring them in and check them in to us so we see everyone that's harvested. And we get ages from teeth. We pull teeth and age them. And then we can enter that into this model and estimate adult survival. So again, if we hit the target, if we're between 65 and 72 or higher, then we would maintain sort of the maximum opportunity allowed in the plan. If we see that parameter dropping below 65%, then we'd need to look at changes. This is the data for that parameter. Last year, we were below it, if anybody recalls. The year before, it was right on the line. This year, we saw a slight increase in survival, but we're still below that lower threshold, the red line. We want to be above that line. The third criteria are the percent of females in the harvest. The idea here is that we want to maintain enough females on the landscape to reproduce and grow the population, maintain a population out there. So in this case, we want to see a number between 41 and 45%. But if that starts to climb higher than 45%, that's when we would look to the plan to see if we need to make any adjustments. So here's that data. So in this case, it's a little different than the first two. In this case, the red line is on the upper side. And this is data since 1999. And this is the third criteria where we're outside of the management plan parameters. So this is just the last several years of data. If you're curious about trends, the first two seem to be declining. The last one seems to be increasing, the percent females in the harvest. So the plan is fairly clear on what we do when this happens. If we find that any two of those parameters outside of the management range in a negative direction, indicating a declining population, we would reduce permits per individual and shorten the season. If all three are outside, we also cap the number of permits at 80% of last year's total sales. Since that's the case, we're recommending reducing permits per individual from 6 to 5, shortening the season by a week on the front end so it would start later in the season, and capping permits at 80% of last year's sales at 6,460. I think I mentioned a couple of things. The reason that the plan adjusts this way is because you can anticipate almost like clockwork that bobcat populations are going to fluctuate, and we have seen a decline in rabbit numbers, and this seems to be following that pattern. And so We're making adjustments to make sure we don't over-harvest as the population declines, and we'd anticipate eventually it'll come back up. And as we see those parameters increase, then we'd go back in and increase these numbers to the cap of 6 the full season, and then we could come off the cap on the permits as well. The flip side of that is if it continues down, or we continue to see these parameters outside of the plan guidelines, we may need to make further reductions as we move forward. Other fur bearer information, these are the seasons we're recommending for 2019 and 20. These are the same seasons we've had for several years, except they're adjusted for the calendar. So for beaver and mink, September 21st through April 1st. For martin, badger, gray fox, kit fox, ringtail, spotted skunk, and weasel, September 21st through March 1st. That's all I have. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Darren. Questions from the rack? Yeah. Scott.
Darren, during the previous down cycles, was this same strategy in play? So have we seen this strategy used before?
This has been
new?
In place for about 5 years, but yeah, initially under the old plan, we saw that kind of thing too. So this plan is slightly different. The parameters are a little bit different, but yeah.
Okay.
I have a question, Darren. So isn't take of bobcat non-selective, so it's whatever comes in a trap, so why would you expect female harvest to be that low? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, to me, I know that there's a little bit of talking to trappers this year with the snow levels, that there were some folks that had trouble getting out to their usual places. But, you know, that's a difficult question to answer other than just the natural cycle of... But you're right, Brock, I think the idea is that people would take traps are not selective in the bobcat they catch necessarily, and I know that a lot of times trappers will let females go, and so maybe if you know a combination of difficult circumstances and kind of taking what you can get, maybe that was what we saw on female numbers. So we'll see going forward what happens.
Other questions from the rack? Questions from the public? We have one comment from the public, Chase Brereton. Come on up to the microphone, state your name, state who you represent, and then provide your comment, Chase.
My name's Chase Brereton. I represent Utah Trappers Association, and I'd just like to add we support the management plan.
Thank you very much. We don't have any other comments. Any comments from the rack? Okay, do we have a motion? Ben?
Motion to approve as presented.
I'll second that.
Okay. Ken seconds it. Any discussion? All in favor? Opposed? It's unanimous. Okay, that was easy. Let's hope the next one's that easy. I don't think so. There's a lot of people here.
It's kind of like a...
Okay, Darren, back to you.
Okay. Let me close this and open the next one. All right, moving on. I'm going to be presenting the division's recommendations for cougar management for the 2019 and 20 season. Similar to bobcat, I just wanted to take a minute, especially with having some new RAC members, and we always have new people in the audience, to explain how we make these decisions in terms of permits that are issued and the recommendations we make to the RACs and the Wildlife Board. First of all, we manage mountain lions in Utah based on the Utah Cougar Management Plan. That plan, the most recent revision of that plan, went into place in 2015. The plan is in place until 2025, and we plan to look at that probably in 2020, I think, is when the plan indicates we ought to take a look and just see where we are with regards to new research and looking at our data and just seeing where we are in terms of cougar management. That plan was created using an advisory group called the Cougar Advisory Group. This is a group that was made up of various stakeholders from different interests, from people who don't like cougar hunting very much to hunters, to houndsmen, to livestock producers. So we tried to get a really diverse group to sit down and try to hammer out some compromises. Part of that process was having the latest research at the time presented. Dr. Dave Stoner out of USU filled that role. And so the plan is a product of that group of folks getting together and coming together on a plan. That plan was adopted by the board in 2015, and the plan's goal, the overriding goal, is to maintain a healthy cougar population within their current distribution while considering human safety, economic concerns, and other wildlife species, and maintaining hunting traditions. And we define in the plan a healthy cougar population as one with a reasonable proportion of older age animals, breeding females, healthy individuals, in balance with natural prey populations, and maintaining genetic variability. And that gets at some of the connectivity issues that you want to be careful about with lions. Make sure that they can move around the landscape. So how do we do that? How do we achieve that goal? This is what the plan sets forth. The most important criteria in the plan are the percent of females that we see in the harvest. So similar to bobcats with mountain lions, we require that people that take mountain lions bring them in to us and give us the opportunity to check and collect biological data, verify the sex of the animal, and look at age. We'll pull teeth and use the teeth to gather age information. Depending on whether or not a specific unit is being managed for predator management, and I'll get to that in a little more detail here in a second, or not, we're shooting to have that number either be below 40%, or in the case of a predator management plan, above 40%. The secondary criteria in the plan is to try to maintain an older age class on the landscape, and so we want to see the number of five-year-olds in the harvest over a three-year period. Both of these metrics are measured over 3 years, so it's an average. That way it kind of dampens down the variance that can occur if you get a really old animal or a really young animal. We want to see that be between 15 and 20%, again, trying to maintain some older animals on the landscape. When we hunt cougars in the state, there are three options for hunting.
Derry, can I interrupt you right there?
Yeah.
On that percent of adults, so are you averaging the age of each individual, summing and averaging? You're
right.
Not looking at individuals separately.
Right.
So you're averaging the ages.
Taking the ages on a unit and averaging it. We're combining 3 years of ages and getting an average percent. Well, percent.
Okay.
Right. We do average it's age too, but for this, it's the percent of five-year-olds or older that we see come through our check. Does that?
Well, so that's the distinction I want to make. If you're looking at the percent of five-year-olds or older, you're looking at individual lions, right?
Right. Yeah. Right. You're right.
Versus if you're averaging an old lion with a young lion, a 9 and a 1, you end up with a 4.5-year-old lion.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Scott. I was thinking of the average, or the number of females in the harvest. But yeah, this is a percentage.
This is a percentage, so it's individuals.
Yeah.
So a particular older age animal is not going to bias the sample here.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
So we have three hunting strategies in the state. You'll see as we move through recommendations how those break out. There's the first opportunity is a limited entry season, and in this case there's a season that's set. A certain number of permits are available through a public draw. If a person draws that tag and fills the tag or doesn't fill the tag, the hunt ends at the end of the season regardless of of the status of those permits at the end of the season. The second one, I'm going to jump down one because the split unit is a combination of these two concepts. The other strategy that we use are harvest objective units. These are quota units. So in this case, the biologist will set a quota for a geographical area, a cougar management unit. Once the quota is filled, then that hunt would end, or if the end of the season occurs, whichever is first. A split unit is a combination of both. It begins as a limited entry unit with people drawing tags, say there's 10 permits available. They go out and go hunting. If 8 of them fill the tags and there are 2 that aren't filled, the season then opens up as a quota unit given a certain day. I think it'll be February 23rd in this proposal. And then those final 2 permits become a quota of 2. And once that quota is filled, the unit would close, or if the end of the season occurs, then the unit would shut down. The final thing we have is a pursuit season. In this case, people can use dogs to pursue cougars, but if they tree a lion, they cannot kill it. They have to release it unharmed, and they can't hold it at bay.
Darren, but that doesn't exclude taking some hair off of it, right?
For you. Oh, for us?
County coup.
Yeah, so in pursuit, we do collect data on pursuit. One of the things I'm going to show you here is we do, right now we're doing a population reconstruction model to try and get at a trend in cougar populations. And that works really good for males because hunters select for males, but they tend to pass on females. And so we use our pursuit data to kind of get at the number of females. There's a percentage of females or a ratio that people tree. And so we can kind of get at that way. So that data is important too. So quickly, let's talk about predator management plans. When would we implement one of these plans out there on the landscape?
Before you jump into that, could I ask a question on the previous one? So I'm looking at 20 split units, 29 harvest objective units, and 5 limited entry units. Right. Would you take just a moment and educate us on maybe the benefits or constraints of one type of hunt versus another? Why we split them up this way and what you expect to realize because of that?
Right. A lot of times harvest objective management strategy would be used if you're trying to have a management level, population level effect on lions on a particular unit. So you're concerned about maybe prey species or the numbers, or you're seeing a lot of lions show up in town. That way you set a quota. It's anybody can buy a permit who wants to go hunt that unit. And so you get a lot of people hitting it fairly quickly and sometimes aren't as selective as they would be if they knew that they were only the 5 people that had a permit. Limited entry is sort of the other end of that spectrum. A set number of permits, people have a season, they know there's only a set number of people that are going to be out there in the field, and they have the area to themselves. People tend to be a little more selective, so if we were concerned about, for example, females in the harvest, we might choose a limited entry strategy to try to give people a chance to let a female go and not feel like someone's going to come in behind them and harvest an animal out from under.
So when there's opportunities or where there's years that you're switching between one or another, right, that may be one of the justifications then.
Yeah, and we can when we look at unit by unit, maybe we can make some of those distinctions too. And split is kind of a little bit of both. You probably, in these cases, you want to allow that sort of exclusive opportunity. This is mainly social and a kind of an exclusive opportunity up front, but you still want to hit your management objective with a quota. So you want to make sure that those number of animals are taken, and so you then open it up as harvest objective to fill the remainder of the permits.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, sure. Moving on to, so predator management, when would we implement these plans and what are they designed to do? First of all, when a big game herd is below objective, and a cougar and cougar predation is considered to be a potential limiting factor for herd growth, so it needs to meet those two criteria. There are actually some specific criteria in the plan, and we can get into that if people are interested. But what we're looking at is we've got a prey population, essentially the habitat that those lions are utilizing, that's below objective, and we think that the lion population may be limiting that population. We would implement a management plan to try to reduce the density of mountain lions in that area, on that unit. This is a plan that has to be approved by the director's office. It runs for 3 years, and there it requires that there's criteria in the plan that explain when we would stop with predator management on the unit, so certain criteria that would have to be met. And then those that are available, those are evaluated on that third year to determine whether we've accomplished what we wanted to accomplish or not. And if the plan is not doing what it's intended to do and doesn't seem to be effective, then we make decisions about whether to continue with that or not. For the purposes of recommendations, if a unit is under a predator management plan, the average percent females in the harvest for the last 3 years, the objective there is to bring that up above 40% to try to actually have a limiting effect on the population in the area. As we go through unit by unit, we'll show you which one of those, which units are falling into that category. I talked a little bit about our population reconstruction model. The way that works, just really briefly, is that you look at the age classes of animals in the harvest that we get from teeth. If you have a five-year-old this year, you assume, this is a statewide estimate, you assume that that animal was alive and 4 years old the year before, and so on back through time, so it's kind of a back calculation. What this yields is a trend. It also yields a minimum, absolute minimum population. This is the population of mountain lions that we actually see in our offices and have an opportunity to check. So I just want to caution you, the trend is more important here than the number, than the estimate. The estimate's going to be low. The other thing that in this is it's illegal to take kittens and yearlings are not, they're underrepresented in the harvest, and so we don't include those in this calculation. So this is two-year-old mountain lions and older. So this doesn't include yearlings and kittens that may be out there on the landscape. But in this graph, you can see on the left, I'll go with the lines. The red line is our reconstruction of adult lion population, two-year-olds and older. The orange line is the deer population estimate for that same time period. And probably the biggest take home here is that when the deer population increases, we tend to see an increase in lion numbers. They follow each other, very similar to what, you know, the typical predator-prey relationship that we see. So if there's room for the prey to grow, more prey abundance means cougars have more resources, they produce more offspring, they can exist in denser concentrations because they've got good resources, and you'd tend to see an increasing population. This graph shows the mortality, hunter take, and then total mortality for the last decade, since 2009, and the trend there. The blue line are the number of lions that have been harvested by hunters. The orange line is total mortality, so the difference there would include things like when Wildlife Services needs to go and take a lion that's been killing livestock, a lion that's turned into us because it's hit on the highway, any lion we get our hands on that's been killed other than by sport harvest. And so those, I put the numbers up there so you could kind of see how that's gone over the last decade or so. Percent females in the harvest. This shows how that's trended since 1990. That the black dashed line is that target. We try to maintain at or below that at a statewide level. And you can, this is just to kind of show how that trend has gone. In the late 90s, early 2000, that was fairly high. That was probably the last time we had a population as high as we're seeing now. And then we've seen some declines through the 2000s, and it looks like maybe it's starting to tick up again there at the end. So quickly, I'm going to summarize our recommendations, then I'll go through everything in detail. I'm going to present our unit-by-unit recommendations a little differently than we've done in the past. What I've done, and you should have gotten a handout in the rack packet, is I've actually categorized the units depending on what categories they fall in the management plan, and it also illustrates what the biologist's options are depending on where they fall. And so we'll go through that, and I'll explain as we go through, but we'll go through the recommendations by category rather than by region and unit. Overall, we're recommending an increase of 34 permits or quota, just depending on how that breaks down between the hunt strategies, but it's an increase of 34 over last year. We're also recommending, similar to what we did with black bears this winter, we're recommending that we go to a three-year recommendation cycle for a lot of the same reasons. One thing that you know, when you talk about a population reconstruction, one thing that can confound that is it's constantly moving the number of permits around, and so you're changing the harvest amount that takes place, and that can actually put noise into your model. So I'll get into that into some more detail later, but we're going to be proposing that like we did with black bears. And finally, we have two proposed rule changes, and we'll get to that as well. So moving on to unit by unit recommendations. What I've done is, if something changes in these slides, I've highlighted it in yellow, and I'll point those out too. This first category are units that are under predator management plans, either for mule deer, concerns with mule deer numbers, or with bighorn sheep numbers. And so in this case, we'd be managing to meet a female objective, female in the harvest objective, over 3 years of 40% or more. All these units are meeting that objective. And according to the plan, if you're under predator management and your percent females in the harvest is above 40%, you maintain your permits from last year. And you can see that's what we're doing here. We are recommending that we change the Ogden unit from a split to a harvest objective unit. These three units are not under predator management, and the percent females in the harvest is therefore exceeding the plan recommendation. So in this case, we'd want to be below 40% females in the harvest. The option in the plan for these is to decrease permits. If you're above 40% females and you're not trying to manage predator numbers down, you need to decrease your permits. And so we're recommending decreases on all three of those units. This next category is the biggest, but these are units that are under predator management. So we'd be trying to manage for females in the harvest between, you know, above 40%, but in these cases they're below 40%. And so the plan guidelines are that you can maintain, depending on, you know, maybe you're looking at trend and it looks like you're going to get there, like on the Book Cliffs, or increase permits. And so, except for the Book Cliffs East, we're recommending increases on all of those units. And again, predator management to address concerns with mule deer populations or bighorn sheep populations. This is the same category. This is just additional units. So on the Wasatch Mountain of Vinequin Wildcat, we're recommending an increase of 10. And everything else there is, I noticed Zion, we're recommending an increase of 3, and I missed that when I did the yellow. So this category, so these are units that are not under predator management again. So the objective here is to maintain females in the harvest below 40%. These units meet that criteria. And so next we look at the number of five-year-olds or older in the harvest, and that needs to be, we're shooting for between 15 and 20%. These units are all under that. The first two units is a change. The Chalk Creek Camas has been a combined unit. We're recommending that we split that apart. We've got some concerns about livestock predation on the Chalk Creek unit that it got really bad this year up there, and so we want to change the strategy, but we want to leave Camas as a limited entry unit. So we're proposing to split that, and you can see the strategies and the permit numbers there. The other three, the options that the biologist has for recommendations for those units, since they're below the percentage on their percent adults, is to either maintain or increase, or sorry, decrease the number of permits. This category, again, we're meeting our female objective and we're hitting the slot on the percentage of 5 years old and older. And in this case, it's the biologist's discretion. They can look at trends, look at other data, and make a decision about what they want to do with permits. So we're recommending a decrease on the Southwest Manti from 18 to 15 and changing that to a limited entry season. We're recommending an increase of 1 on the Pine Valley South. These units meet the female objective, but they exceed the age objective. And so in this case, the options are either to maintain the number of permits or increase the number of permits. And you can see the recommended changes there in yellow. I'm just scanning to make sure I didn't miss another one. Looks like I got all the changes there. We have a lot of units in the state where the permit numbers are low enough or success rates are small enough that we don't collect a valid statistical sample of lions off of the unit that are harvested. And so the parameters are really meaningless. They can change drastically depending on an individual animal. And so in the plan, when you fall into this category, it's up to the biologist's discretion and his or her knowledge of the area and maybe what's going on with prey animals. So it's left up to them. We're recommending on the Beaver West an increase from 3 to 6. That was a unit that was split out last year at the board, and we're proposing a bighorn sheep transplant. That's the Mineral Mountains. And so we're recommending an increase on that unit, but the rest are staying the same. Finally, we have four units that fall into a special category where we have unlimited permits available. The reason that they fall into this category is these are desert units where the primary prey base would be bighorn sheep. There just aren't any other large ungulates that can be found there. An individual lion getting into a bighorn sheep herd can actually have population level effects and actually do enough damage that we could lose that herd. And so so what I did here, just because you say unlimited and that sounds pretty drastic, I put the last 2 years of harvest off of those units. You can see that, you know, some years it's 0, some years it's 1. The most I think we've seen historically is 4, which was off of the Kaparowitz last year. But these are not dense lion units, mainly desert, rocky country, kind of desert bighorn sheep habitat. This is just to show kind of how things break down between the quota units and the either limited entry or limited entry split strategies, and just how that's changed since the plan was implemented in 2015. So for a three-year recommendation cycle, a lot of our concerns are the same that we expressed for bear. We're doing things already on these three-year cycles, so we're looking at 3 years of data. Predator management plans are implemented on a three-year cycle. And so what we'd like to do is set permits, let that hold steady for a three-year period, and then evaluate at the end of the three-year period. We feel like we'll get better data from that because we're not constantly changing the parameters in the model. However, we do want to recommend that we have the opportunity, if we see something in the data that indicates, an emergency biological situation with either the lion population or their prey base, that we can bring that back to the RACs, that specific unit, that specific problem, and recommend a change. But the objective would be to maintain permit numbers and seasons for a three-year period and harvest strategies, and then look at that on a three-year cycle. Season dates, most of these are just adjusted for the calendar. I'll point out a couple of changes. These are all the same. Just to remind everybody, we recommended last year that the Ponsagon is a harvest objective. It's actually a split unit, and it's the only unit on a split where we'd actually run it year-round. The reason for that is that harvest is very low. Very few mountain lions are taken off the Ponsagon. It's very difficult to hunt. The conditions usually are not great. There's not a lot of snow. And we had a quota or a permit, 10 permits last year. They filled one. So we want to try, and we've got some concerns about the deer herd down there. We want to get a little bit more harvest on that. But that's not a change, but I just wanted to remind everybody why that's different. We are recommending one change on the La Salle and San Juan. We currently have a no-dog window on those units for bears from September 14th through 22nd. That's when the limited entry archery elk season runs down there. And so...
rifle elk?
Is it rifle? I guess it is. Anyway, we want to make sure that if you can't run dogs for bears, you can't run dogs for lions. That just alleviates any confusion. So we're recommending that season, there's no dogs September 14th through 22nd. Yeah, the archery season I was thinking of was on the book cliffs. So. And finally, pursuit season, that's not a change. That's just an adjustment for the calendar. I want to spend just a moment and talk a little bit about livestock depredation and what those trends have looked like over time. So this is since 2001. The yellow line here indicates the number of depredation incidences. So this is if a producer detects that something has killed a sheep or a calf or something like that, or a goat, they contact Wildlife Services. Wildlife Services will come out, investigate, and if they confirm that it was a cougar kill, we would log that in as an incident. And that the number of animals that might be taken in those could be one, it could be 10, it could be, we had a bear a couple years ago that killed almost 200 in one night because it ran it into a ravine and they all suffocated. So this is just a trend of how many times we get this reported. The blue line here, the number of lions that have been removed over that time period by Wildlife Services because they're killing livestock. You can see, since 2016, or actually implementation of the plan, that current plan, we've seen an increase. Probably you're seeing some leveling off, but at least the rate of increase seems to be slowing down a little bit. This is a similar thing, but it's just based on the value, overall value of losses over time to cougar predation. The division maintains a budget to pay, to compensate livestock producers if they can confirm that a mountain lion kills their livestock. We'll pay for, current market value for those animals. And so these are just the total amounts for lion depredation since 2001. Producers have several options under our rule when they have this kind of activity going on. First of all, if the lion is caught into the act or within 72 hours of a predatory event, the producer has 72 hours to try to remove that lion from the immediate area. And The other option is the division, if they've got chronic depredation, so that would be they're losing livestock year after year after year, they qualify for depredation permits, and those can be used to try to address concerns and problems that they have on the landscape when their sheep aren't there. Wildlife Service is always there to assist with those situations, and a lot of times they're the ones that are handling and carrying out the process on trying to help livestock producers. And then I mentioned our compensation program. So those are just a few options that are open to livestock producers. Finally, a couple of rule changes. The first is kind of a bookkeeping change. We just wanted to update the cougar rule to reflect some of the changes to the big game legal weapons definitions. So this would include the changes they made to archery equipment, the air bow changes. It's just to make it consistent. So a legal weapon would be, you know, a firearm, a bow that meets certain criteria, a crossbow, or one of these pneumatic air bows that shoots an arrow. Oops. Let me go back one because I missed the second one. The other change, we're asking that, I put GPS here, but I think technically the rule says require that we're provided with the actual location of any lion that's killed in the state by a hunter. We want to start building a database of those locations, and we feel like that'll give us a little bit finer scale information on how to manage. So, you know, if we see that, you know, the harvest is concentrated in a specific area, we might want to adjust unit boundaries to try to spread people out or take some pressure off of one area and move it to another. So we're asking for that. This is anticipation of going to probably going to an electronic check-in format down the road as that gets built and comes online. So a couple of fun, I think they're fun things. I think I mentioned last year we've undertaken a study with Utah State University and the National Wildlife Research Center in Millville and Logan. And we spent this winter collaring mountain lions on three units, on the Cache, which is just outside of Logan, on the Manti, which is local here, and then on the Bookcliffs. And it's still early days. You know, most of these are caught December, January, February, but we are starting to see some interesting things. They're wearing a GPS collar that gives us a location every 2 hours, and so we are getting some pretty incredible movement stuff. The majority of the lions, these are all female lions that we collared, have definite home territories, and they're staying very local. We've had a couple of weird anomalies, and it's always fun to talk about the anomalies. So this is a lion that was caught that you can see on the east side of Bear Lake in December. And immediately after she was caught, she came over, this is December, she came over the mountain and spent the winter in Blacksmith Fork Canyon just below Hardware Ranch up until April. And then she just decided, I'm out of here. You see her come down, she hits I-80, comes down to Echo, crosses, hits the Uintas, decides that's too high, keeps on going south, and so as of July 10th, she'd moved over 180 miles from where she was first captured. So this is good news for connectivity across that area. Obviously, lions are able to make those movements. Probably the biggest barrier was I-80, and she spent a few days kind of figuring that out, but then she managed to get across. The next thing we do with this movement data, when we detect that a mountain lion is spending some time at a given location, we go in and try to determine what she was doing there. What we're looking for is what she may have killed and eaten. But we're also finding that they, a lot of times after they make a kill, they have these lounge spots. They'll kind of move off and just kind of lay down and digest, I guess. If we arrive and there's enough of the carcass left that we think that the lion might return, we set up a camera. And so this is an example of some of the footage that that we've been able to catch. And again, it's one lion on a couple of days, and so it's not diagnostic of a larger pattern, but it's certainly interesting. So this lion, all that leaf matter is where she's cached a deer carcass. And you can see it's about 2:10 in the morning on the 12th of June. She's returning. She's already obviously been there and cached it. She spends, this is about 20 minutes later, she's kind of poking around. Our researchers are really disappointed because they thought, wow, this is great, look at this. And then she grabs it and takes it off the camera. But the next night, so this is 9:40, the next night, this guy or gal shows up. And checking things out, something smells good. Some of you may have seen this already. The bear does us a favor, brings the deer back on into camera range, and he spends a couple of hours there with it. So this is midnight. We had a jump there, but he was there at 10. He's still there at midnight. And then again, like clockwork, at almost a quarter after 2, wait for it. Here comes lion back, and she's, you can tell she's like, what's up? Something's not quite right here. And she moves off camera. We're not sure what she did, but this is 30 minutes later. Here comes the bear back again. So this is a question that we are looking at. We are curious about what kind of activities are taking place at this kill site. What other animals might be utilizing these carcasses? And what does that mean for predation rates and those sort of things? Again, this is just one instance, but we're hoping to get a lot more of this kind of data to be able to learn more about our lion populations and what might be going on out there on the landscape. That's all I have. Thank you very much.
Darren, I may have missed this. Was that camera, is that part of that study out on the book cliffs?
It is, yeah. Okay. It was on the book cliffs.
Questions from the rack for
just
Darren.
Just a comment, Darren.
Comments later.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Questions from the rack.
Yeah, Darren. So maybe you could, so we saw a previous collared kitty that went from the Ochres all the way to Colorado.
Right.
And back to the Ochres. And so, right. You know, and here we are managing, you know, trying to herd cats. Sorry.
Yeah, literally.
Too bad. Using these smaller units. Now, I can understand that for bighorn sheep and protecting that. That makes all the sense in the world. But we've got some new studies out that indicate that, you know, that deer and elk, you know, that may not be as functional. Right. So could you address the whole issue of these movements are just like all over the place.
So right now we've got 13 mountain lions that are wearing collars. Two of them have made these kind of movements. The rest have set up local territories, and they pretty much hang, and some of them overlap, and we're curious to see if they may be siblings.
But those are females, right?
And these are all females.
Yeah, right. So that's...
And so we had one on the book cliffs that went all the way almost to Craig, Colorado, and she's turned around and come all the way back to where we caught her. So the literature seems to indicate that you have these kind of these local populations at a relatively small scale, maybe even at a unit level, and then you have this transient population that's sort of constantly there. And as habitat or as territories may open up, then they'll fill those niches. But hunting for this kind of animal, hunting is more of a how do you regulate pressure of human hunting on the landscape, but you really do need to be thinking of a much larger scale in terms of population management. And some of the things that what this means is a lot of times we'll have these refugia that are sort of supplying areas where we might see higher hunter harvest. And it doesn't take, we saw in the Monroe when we experimentally reduced that population that within 3 years of backing off that lion population rebounded. So it happens really fast because there's this movement. Also, lions are they reproduce quickly. They can have, you know, 2, 3, 4 kittens. Yeah, 5 sometimes. So, you know, they're very much like your house cats, just a lot bigger. Behaviors are a lot the same. They can be an estrus any time of the year. They don't have a seasonal breeding cycle. So, yeah.
Ben.
Darren, if I recall correctly, the Southwest Manta unit, you're looking for a reduction of 3 permits.
Yep.
How's our deer herd doing on that unit? I know last year there was some discussion.
Yeah,
permits on that tag and
I think maybe what I'll do is let Rusty speak to that. And Brock actually has, not that it'd be a surprise that Brock would have some knowledge, but
I'd love to hear.
He might be able to inform that too, because BOA's been conducting a study down there as well. So let me just, I think that was it there. Nope. There we go.
Yeah, so that deer herd has been, you know, fairly low density for years now. I had BYU pull some data for me leading up to this, and some of the interesting data was that basically the deer there have very good body conditions. It's not a habitat issue, in my opinion. And I don't think we had, with all our collared does and fawns, we haven't had a single deer die of starvation in the last 2-3 years that was collared, which is pretty incredible. So I don't think it's a habitat issue. I think probably something initially knocked those deer down, and I think lion predation is probably keeping them down for the time being. This year's data looks really good as far as high doe survival, but you know, it's still early. The time will tell how that ends up, but at least the past couple of years they've been in the 70s as far as adult doe survival, which isn't great.
Yeah, so and that's why I ask. It surprised me to see that reduction permits on the lions, considering the deer, what we're seeing happen on the deer down there. I mean, would it be within reason to leave those permits where they were at last year?
Right. I think the thought process there, not I think, I know the thought process there because I did it, but a couple of years ago we were at 8 permits on that unit. And with 8 permits, we had a 10% female harvest, and we said we really need to get with the plan here. We went to 12 permits, and we got 33% female harvest. And then this year, we were 18 and got 42, actually over-harvested and got to the mid-40s female harvest. And so if you throw out that first year, I know we're managing on a 3-year cycle, but I think that first year is really dragging that average down to the 30s. And so the thought process was still keep after the lions, but just let off the gas a little bit.
To compensate for that over-harvest in the females?
Yeah. And I think whatever harvest we get this year will be at 40, will be right there.
Okay.
So, yep.
All right, thanks.
Darren, I have a question about the transient lions.
Yeah.
And about those that set up their own little boundaries, if you will, or territories. Does age have a factor, or does age factor into that at all?
And typically, the lion that you're likely to see show up in town is a 2-year-old male lion that literally has got to move, or that big male on the mountain's going to take him out. It's a little more unusual to see these big movements with females. They seem to be more tolerant. Again, we're seeing some overlap, and we're curious. Taking DNA samples, we're going to have that analyzed. We're curious to know if they're siblings. But even, you know, there's been some work up on the Tetons that show that at kill sites, sometimes females will tolerate, and sometimes a big male will come in and help. It's similar to what you see in African lions. You know, the males kind of eat first, but the females will tolerate that. So there's a little more social. There's some social stuff that people are learning with a lot of this new technology. But there's even, you know, all the way back to Hornocker in Idaho, looking at transient animals, that's just been, we've known that for a long time, that there's always this young, moving population that is responsible for filling those habitats as they, you know, either through natural mortality or hunter harvest get vacated.
Okay, I have a couple. Darren, is there a target population size for the state?
No, there isn't. The objectives in the plan are just to maintain. So the target would be to try to make sure that we're maintaining a healthy population of lions and that we're not over harvesting. But we do that by meeting these harvest criteria. But there isn't a population management or population target like we have with big game.
So is it correct that over the last 14 years, the population's been increasing by about 7% a year?
Looks like it, yeah. Yeah.
And so if you have 34 more tags, it'll still be increasing by 5% a year?
Yeah. The thing that seems apparent to me is that lion numbers grow if their food grows, their population grows. Yeah.
Ben.
Darren, I don't remember who made this statement or which meeting it was in, but from what I recall, recently there's a discussion, it may have been the Mule Deer Committee, that out on the Ogre Stansberry, since our most recent sheep transplant out there, we've lost, I think it was 5 sheep to lion kills. Has that number changed? Has it gone up at all, or are we still sitting at 5?
Jason probably knows, don't you?
Yeah, that number hasn't changed. Once the snow melted, it seems like the predation basically stopped. So our last one was in May.
And refresh my memory, when did that transplant happen?
It was the end of February.
End of February, and we lost 5. There was 5 sheep out of 20, correct?
Yeah, so we lost.
So we lost 25%.
Yep, correct.
Percent.
Yep. Okay. The first loss occurred 10 days after the transplant, so it was pretty quick.
All right.
The cougars were able to find that group of sheep.
Okay, thank you.
I have one more question for you, Darren. So can you explain, it appeared that when you talked about the recommendations, Current Creek had 0% female harvest, but you're not recommending any increase.
Yeah, is that one of those low sample size ones?
Okay, yeah, it is small. I think it was only 4.
Yeah, and you know, we could look at the numbers, but a lot of these low sample size units aren't meeting the quota as it is. So, you know, they've got a quota of 6, but they take 2 or something. So
last question, is there any concern with the population continuing to go up? So say it goes up 5% a year, that in 3 years, what you're recommending here, that's 20,000 a deer a more a year that these lions are going to be eating just because of the population increase. Does that concern the division?
It seems over time, you know, I think lions have a carrying capacity on the landscape similar to their, and it's tied to their prey base. And so if we see declines in mule deer especially, lions tend to follow that too. So at some point, we'd expect to see that level off.
Okay. Other questions from the rack? Okay, we'll have questions from the public, but there were a few people that came in late. If you want to comment on this recommendation, you need to make sure you filled out one of these cards and get it passed into somebody. So questions from the public.
Can I ask one?
Nate, state your name and who you represent. And then
Jason Walker. I'm just an old hound dogger. Okay. I'm not representing anybody, but... I was just curious, what was the number, your population estimate back in 2009, about 10 years ago?
We can go back to that, but again, you know, with that slide, I want to be real cautious about looking at the number. It's more a trend. Also, the further back you get into time, the less reliable that estimate is.
Oh, okay.
But it looks like...
It just seemed pretty drastic.
Right, yeah. It looks like it's, you know, in 2004, it's probably about half of what it is now. Mm.
It almost seems like we had more back then. Yeah. To me, that's why I asked, but right. Just thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, we'll have comments from the public now. The first one is Matt Farnsworth.
Thank you. I know I've emailed back and forth. I've spoke to several of you guys personally. I just want to make sure I'm clear here. I'm representing myself tonight. I'm not representing the Hound Association. I am here for myself. This is a unit that I talked to Darren a little earlier, and he brought it up, said it pretty accurately. Everybody has their pet unit that they know more than the biologist, and they want to take care of it. I have a couple of those, and I'd like to speak to those today. First one is the Southwest Manti. We've heard some talk back and forth about that. I just want to thank Rusty. I think his recommendation was spot on. I like the decrease in tag. It's nice to see that he's being proactive about that. He recognized what's going on, and he's acting in accordance with that, and just thank you for that. I appreciate it. The second one I'd like to speak to is the Vernon unit. It is one of those that fell under the low sample size. I brought this up every rack for the last 3 years, every board meeting, every hound association meeting. It never seems to take traction. I just would like to try one more time here. So in the 2016-2017 season, there were 12 tags. There were 3 lions harvested. In the 2017-2018 season, 12 tags, 3 lions harvested. In the 2018-2019, best snow conditions that we've had on record, 4 lions were harvested, but there's still the 12 tags. This last year, we had 75% female harvest. I understand the low sample size and reacting to that, but why are we giving 12 tags when we're not even killing a percentage of that number? I mean, the highest number we've had killed over the last 4 years has been 4. That's a split unit. 2 of the most successful lion outfitters in the state live within an hour's drive of that unit. They don't hunt it. They don't hunt that unit when it opens up to 1,500 harvest objective tags later in the year. There's a reason for that. It's because the lions aren't there. I just ask you to consider that unit. And I agree with Darren, it is a low sample size. When you're only killing 4 lions tops off a unit, it's hard to come up with a good estimate. But what we're doing is not working. There's no predator management plan on that unit. There is zero wildlife service harvest on that unit. There is zero other mortality unit on that unit. The lions just aren't there. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Corey Huntsman.
Hi, Corey Huntsman. I'm with the Utah Houndsman Association. I live in Erd out in Tooele County. I'd like to thank the chair and the board. We appreciate the opportunity to be heard. I'd like to thank the biologists that have took the time to meet with us this year prior to these meetings. Especially like to thank Darren. There's several new board members, myself included, this year in our club. And Darren's been over backwards getting us caught up to speed. Start with the division's cougar recommendations. We support all of them with the exception of just a couple. First one's the Southeast Manti. The division proposed, or they recommended an increase of 2. We recommend a 0 increase on that. Reason is that since 2015 to 16, we've seen 100% increase on our Southern Manti units. It used to be the premier lion unit in the state, and we didn't even fill the quota last year with record snow. Second unit is a little bit different scenario. The division proposed a limited change in the Southwest Manti to a limited entry from a split and decreasing by 3. And I know Darren was shocked when he opened up his email and we opposed that. The reason is we heard that SFW and probably Mule Deer Foundation was going to propose an increase because they were concerned about the deer populations. We were trying to be proactive and come up with a compromise. So we proposed leaving it a split, but going with the division's recommendations of decrease of 3. I apologize to Rusty and the gentleman that he met with. We didn't know that he was already working with some houndsmen, or we would have coordinated with them prior. Well, they spent a lot of time getting that to a limited entry and a compromise there. Anyways, that's all I have on those two.
Okay, thank you.
The third issue we have, it's not an issue, the 3-year decision criteria. We strongly support that. The only issue we have there is the Ochre, Stansbury East, not the west with the sheep, but the east. It's at 8 right now with the conservation tag that we sell, so 9. We feel that 3 years at 9 is too high for that unit, with it being a limited entry unit. This year we had, the tag holders were friends and family of some pretty good houndsmen, and a couple outfitters, well-known outfitters, had clients on that unit. We hit every horse trail, hiking trail, snowmobile trail, anything you can get up that mountain. We turned it upside down and we came up with one tom over 5 years old. We did kill an old female, which kind of threw off the percentage of the age that kicked it out of the management plan for a decrease. We just didn't feel that 17-year tag to draw, we should be killing a couple five-year-old lions on there. But especially this year with, you know, record snow, and we still couldn't come up with five lions. They're just not there. We go 9 years. Sorry, I'm kind of loud in this. We go 9 years. I mean, 3 years with nine lions, it's just going to get worse. We recommend a decrease of 2. The Oakers is a unique unit, being a kind of an island. They just don't backfill like the other units do. In 2007, we really knocked the population down, and it took from 2007 to 2012, we averaged 2 lions, and that was when the Oakers and Stansbury's were combined. So 2 mountain ranges, it took 6 years to bounce back after we over-harvested it. That's all I have on that.
Okay.
Our other issue, I mean our other proposal on the changing the criteria on the limited entry, we will wait till the management plans on that. I think we sent it in the letter, but we'll hold off on that.
Thank you. Kevin Norman.
Thank you. I'm Kevin Norman, representing SFW tonight. Thank you guys for the opportunity. We're here tonight to support the division's recommendations as presented, with the following exceptions. First being the cash. Brock, you're familiar with the situation up there. The deer herd's suffering greatly. We have a fawn study going on that Brock's grad students working on now. And it's pretty alarming. Over the last 4 years, the cash fawn survival rate is averaging 27%, which should tell you that the future isn't that bright as well. SFW is throwing everything we can at the cash, trying to suppress the coyotes, the predation problem that's up there. There was a in the presentation. It was recommended that the permits are dropped to 22, I believe, and we're proposing that those stay at 25. We're fine with a healthy lion population as long as there's a healthy deer population. If the deer herd's suffering, we're fine with the lion population being suppressed as well. The next would be on the Southwest Manti. We're with the Hound Association on making that a split unit, or leaving it a split unit instead of moving to the harvest objective. But we would like to see the permit numbers stay at 18 on that unit. It's the same, same scenario, other than looking at the data, as they talked about. The adult doe survival is suffering from predation greatly. On the Southeast Manti, we're recommending an increase to 26 permits. And on the Oker Stansbury West with the sheep, we know that the management plan can only allow 100% increase, which would move to 4 to 8, which is what was recommended. We would like to see that even bumped higher to 12. You guys have the power to vote on that and do so. So we thank you for your time, and hope you consider these recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you. Sunday's Hunt.
here representing the Humane Society of the United States. On behalf of our supporters in Utah, I respectfully request, am I too close? I respectfully request that this council reject the Division of Wildlife Resources' proposed cougar hunting quotas, which are unsustainable and not informed by the best available science, including decades of Utah-based cougar studies. The recommendations allow an unmitigated slaughter of one member of Utah's native wildlife. The proposed 2019 to 2020 cougar hunting quota of 678 cats, which doesn't include the four units with unlimited quotas, allows for the killing of up to 40% of Utah's adult and sub-adult age cats. The DWR's proposed quotas not only far exceed the limits in the DWR's own Utah Cougar Management Plan, but they also exceed four times greater than what is biologically sustainable. Western cougar biologists have found that cougars cannot endure population losses greater than 14%. Accepting the DWR's recommendations would represent a failure to use sound science to inform these decisions, as well as a failure to protect a wildlife for all Utahns. Utah cougars at this extreme rate will exacerbate conflicts with livestock. The constant chaos from hunting and predator control disrupts stable family units. When the stable adults are replaced by an influx of young males, the teenagers, Utah's ranchers are more likely to lose their unprotected livestock. Moreover, research shows that cougar and human conflicts are higher in areas where cougars are hunted or killed by predator control agents. Killing cougars to grow mule deer or bighorn sheep herds won't work either. In studies where researchers deliberately removed predators from the landscape, they saw no benefit on mule deer herd numbers. That is because access to adequate nutrition, that is moisture for plants from rain and snow, and the ability for herds to migrate along their historic corridors is a key factor in growing mule deer herds. Killing predators will not bring Utah's deer herds back, as decades of evidence has already proved, including Utah's expensive bounty on coyotes. Cougars reduce or eliminate chronic wasting disease in deer herds. Researchers found that adult mule deer preyed upon by cougars were more likely to have CWD than deer shot by hunters. Moreover, the study found that cougars consumed over 85% of carcasses, thereby removing a significant amount of contamination from the environment. The current proposals are not based on science, are not in conformance with the DWR's own cougar management plan, and they won't help the mule deer population or the ranchers. The state's proposal is not based on sound science, and respectfully, it is therefore the duty of this board to reject this proposal. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Sundays. Wade Garrett.
Thank you to the RAC for the opportunity to comment. I'm representing Utah Farm Bureau and the ag folks in the state. We support this plan along with working with you on the deprivation plan of cats that are causing livestock and ranchers problems and also educating our folks with the opportunities to take care of those deprivating cats. As you saw the last of Darren's presentation, we're having higher conflicts, but for whatever reasons, our government trappers have leveled off in what their wildlife services are taking. So some of these other options that are out there, and Darren and I have spoke before this about ways to educate producers on ways to take care of those cats through other means, and appreciate the opportunity to comment and working with you guys to help protect the livestock interest in the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Wade. Andy Lyon.
Hello, Andy Lyon, representing myself. Just like to thank all of you guys for everything you do. I'd like to thank the DWR for what they do. In particular, I'm here in support of the presentation that the DWR's made on the Southwest Manti. I've had the opportunity to meet with Rusty in great length and go over his data, and he's spot on down there. So I'm in support of what he's recommending for the Southwest Manti. Thank you.
The decrease to 15 tags, is that?
Decrease to 15 tags and limited entry, yes.
Thank you, Andy. I believe it's McCrane Christiansen.
McCrane Christiansen representing myself. I'm in support of Rusty's recommendations to drop the number to 15 permits and limited entry. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Robert Olson.
Robert Olson, representing myself. I'd like to thank Rusty and Daniel. Darren. Sorry. For the efforts that they've put in to finding out what's going on in a specific area, like the Southwest Manti. They're going down there and talking to us and the hunt there and have a good knowledge of what the population's like down there. And it's refreshing to see this effort. And I back their recommendation fully, especially on that Southwest Manti. And thank you.
Thank you, McCrane. Robert Olson. Oh, sorry. I told you I'd make a gaffe before the night was over. There you go. Okay, John Ziegler.
Appreciate the opportunity to chat with you all. And pardon reading the. I want to make sure I get it right for you. I'd like to make 5 points to you today, some of which may be news to one or more of you.
John, are you representing yourself or a group?
Yes, sir. I am representing myself as an individual. First off, I am against the proposed increase in cougar tags for this coming season. And in fact, we'd like to see a decrease in tags for reasons to follow. Firstly, common sense-wise, 6:30 p.m. on a Wednesday evening in Springville, Utah, is hardly a convenient time for citizens throughout the central region of the state to attend a meeting. It is well recognized that the RAC process severely inhibits input and participation by the general citizenry, most of whom are unlikely to even know the date, time, and location of the RAC meetings where topics of interest to them are being discussed. And trust me, this is a topic of interest. It is well recognized that most citizens in the state oppose trophy hunting of cougars. DWR data is at best a rough estimate when it comes to the number of cougars in the state, which likely may range anywhere from 2,000 to maybe 4,000. Also unknown is the number of all-cause deaths of cougars each year. Filled tags, wildlife services for depredation issues, vehicular incidents, poaching, natural mortality, etc. We really don't really have a good handle on how many cougars are getting killed each year or dying each year. For example, the best guess of natural mortality is anywhere between 10 and 23% of the population. This equates, given our unclear number of cougars that are here, perhaps 2,000, perhaps 4,000, that 10 to 23% results in a range of 200 to 920 natural deaths expected in the population, aside from hunting and such. Do the math. We may well be removing too many cougars to sustain healthy populations going forward. Houndsmen, as with last year, as some have spoken tonight, many of them, as boots on the ground, believe that the cougar population is generally dropping and oppose an increase in tags. Also, many acknowledge that it is almost impossible, or often impossible, or very difficult, to accurately determine the sex of a treed animal or reliably tell whether it's lactating. Last but not least, I'd like to talk to you about transmissible spongiform encephalopathy. That's quite a mouthful. CWD. Latest data from the CDC suggests that chronic wasting disease is pathogenic, causes illness, in a number of primates closely related to man. There's a growing concern that chronic wasting disease prion ingestion or exposure may be a cause of disease in man, including neurodegenerative disease syndromes causing a variety of symptoms. The CDC guidelines in handling body fluids, organs, meat, etc. from deer, elk, or moose that may possibly have chronic wasting disease, possibly, require extensive personal protective equipment. You must avoid fluids and such.
You're out of time, but I'll give you 30 more seconds.
Well, that's great. This I think is a punchline you all need to hear. The spread of chronic wasting disease over the past several years is correlated with predator removal in a number of provinces in Canada and states in the U.S. Chronic wasting disease is currently found in 24 U.S. states and growing. Predators such as cougars select out injured and diseased animals as prey, often before overt symptoms of disease are visible. Chronic wasting disease is now in several, mostly eastern counties in Utah, including Utah and Wasatch counties. To continue to recklessly overhunt the Utah cougar population is a mistake that may well prove to have terrible consequences. As a physician who has been involved in clinical research oversight for over 30 years, I ask that you do the responsible thing and recommend to the Wildlife Board that we lower or at a minimum freeze rather than increase the number of cougar tags this coming season. I hope you all heard what I said about the CDC recommendations. Utah and Wasatch counties are known to have chronic wasting disease, and their recommendations are very clear that, you know, meat is to be avoided, the animal body fluids and such. This is a big deal, and this has the potential to be a very big deal in years to come. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, John. Denise Peterson.
Hello, and thank you for your time this evening. My name is Denise Peterson, and I'm actually representing myself tonight. I'm going to take a chapter from John's book and read so I don't overlook anything. So a little bit about me. My background is in natural resources management, wildlife biology, and GIS. Over the last several years, I've spent quite a lot of time studying cougars, both through literature and boots on the ground. I do a lot of camera trapping up in the mountains here and have gotten to know our cats and track them and literally follow in their footsteps. So their management is very important to me, suffice it to say. So when I heard that the UDWR wanted to increase the quota yet again, it gave me pause. Raising the quota again is not in line with the best available science, which says that if you're harvesting more than 15 to 17%, which is the intrinsic growth rate, and increasing the quota to about 678, I think it was, whatever the additional 34 was, is greater than, I think it was 25% of the overall population, which would lead to an overall decline in Utah's mountain lion population. So for that reason right there, I cannot support yet again increasing the quota, even if it is just 34 tags. I'd also like to note that researchers have found that targeting mountain lions to boost mule deer numbers may actually be having the opposite effect. I know it makes sense, okay, we take out a predator that eats mule deer, our mule deer are going to rebound, they're going to do all right. But a study that was released this year actually found that by heavily hunting a population, hunters generally target that trophy tom, the big boy that, you know, who wouldn't want that cat. So what that does is that actually leaves the younger cats to fill that void. And these younger cats specialize on mule deer, where the older toms specialize on larger prey like elk, for instance. So increasing quotas and heavily hunting a population is actually having the opposite effect, and it's affecting our deer. And I do come from a hunting background. I love venison just as much as the next guy. So that's really, it stuck in my mind that it's like, okay, we can't keep raising this number because we want to boost deer when we're actually having the opposite effect. One other thing, and this came from another study that was released this year. Researchers found that delaying the start of mountain lion hunting seasons until December 1st would actually protect about 91% of kittens from perishing as a result of being orphaned by hunters. So if a female with kittens is killed, and I know that it's illegal to kill a female that is accompanied by kittens, but you don't always know because they leave the den often. So when a kitten is orphaned, even if they're 12 months of age, 14 months of age, they are not equipped with the skills to survive. So by delaying the start of the hunting season to December 1st could effectively reduce the amount of kittens that are being that die from being orphaned.
Denise, you're out of time, but I'll give you the same 30 seconds I gave John.
Okay. Last thing I wanted to mention is in the last year, I've had the pleasure of getting to know a couple of houndsmen, which I hadn't had that opportunity before. And I've learned from my conversations with them that they've got a really good sense of what's going on the ground. So I think it would behoove all of us, all of you, if you listen to their recommendations and take them to heart. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Garrett Smith.
My name's Garrett Smith. I'm representing myself. I'm an outfitter here in the state. And, you know, you guys are doing a good job. Rusty, I met with him the other day, and, you know, he's willing to learn and what we know. And, I mean, I specialize in lion and spend most of my life chasing them. And, I mean, you guys are doing a great job. I think our numbers are fine. The only thing I would like to see is a little better age class on the males, and I don't know what the recipe is for that. It's a tough one, but you know, I mean, I can go find a multiple lion most days, you know, and so I mean, I think you're doing a great job, and you know, just the opportunity to hunt them, and like I say, the only thing that seems like could improve is the age class, and I mean, you know, hearing the some of these things brought up, I think there is plenty of lion if people get out there and do what they need to. So thank you, guys.
Thank you, Garrett. That's all the cards I have. Is there anybody else that was planning to comment? Okay, I'll turn it over to the rack for comment. Ben.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and get us started. I'd like to address some of these comments from the public. I think largely I'm going to be preaching to the choir, but I'm going to address some of them anyway. There's been some comments regarding that we are not using the best available science for our cougar plan and our cougar recommendations. I think we have some of the best biologists in the country here, and we are doing more research and color studies and partnering with universities like BYU, who I respect you, Brock, and your students. I've interacted with them, and we are learning. I mean,
and I'm a deer biologist, not a cougar biologist.
Yeah, but still, you're involved in this part of it too, and we're learning leaps and bounds over the last few years, stuff we've never learned before. I think we're leading the country in the science, if I'm being honest. It's been said that these recommendations that we're recommending in an unsustainable number of permits, and yet Darren showed us a graph with, over the last, 20 years, a steady increase in population.
So I was going to cut. Is that true, Darren? I thought I saw a 7% annual increase.
It was from the average close to 2,500 from what I recall on that graph.
Right, yeah, I mean, the only thing I would preface that with is that all models are wrong,
but some are useful. You've referred before, the important part is the trend.
The trend is important.
And the trend is trending up for 20 years. Yeah, there it is right there. And at a fairly steep angle as well. And so I don't buy into that argument that the number of permits we're issuing are unsustainable at all. I'm looking at the data. I'm looking at the science.
That's
It was also just suggested that these proposals don't follow the current plan. I think they follow the plan exactly as the plan was written and meant to be followed. The gentleman John here in the audience, and I, actually a couple people suggested that cougars select CWD animals. I don't know if that's true or not. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. But what I can tell you, about a month and a half ago or so, maybe a couple months ago on the mule deer committee, we brought in a biologist from Colorado that Colorado has been managing deer for CWD Jason, you was there, what, 20 plus years? And we discussed CWD and how to manage CWD for, what, 2.5 hours? I never once heard a word about cougars. Colorado, I think, is leading the country in managing for CWD, and cougars isn't part of their equation. Something that we need to keep in mind here as we address the cougar recommendations, when we talk cougars, we're not just managing cougars, we're managing deer and we're managing sheep as well, and we need to keep that in mind as we make our recommendations. Now more on positive notes. Big hand of the DWR and their recommendations. I'm looking through my notes here and looking at where the DWR's recommendations differ from some of our sportsmen's recommendations, and I think across the state where the variance in recommendations is single digits. That's saying something. We're like we're really dang close to where everybody wants to be. So congratulations to Darren and team on that. With that said, that's pretty much what I want to address. There's a few things here that our sportsmen's organizations brought up, some small variances that I think we should probably, when it's time, address those, maybe on a unit by unit basis. But generally, I support the plan as was presented by Darren.
Thanks, Ben. Ken?
I'd like to second what Ben said. I think that they've done an excellent job in trying to figure this situation out. Now with the callers, it'll give them a better understanding of what's going on. My concern that I have right now, and maybe this is what Ben wants to talk about, but the Southwest Manti, we lowered the permits down 3. But last year we went around and was told, the division told us that we have the best health for the deer herd. We have plenty of habitat. Everything seems to be going good. And the number one thing that was happening to the deer was lion predation. And now we're lowering the tags. And I do have a problem with lowering the tags. And I still think it ought to be maintained a split unit. We can discuss that later.
I will comment on that, Ken, because I have a little insider knowledge there. So 2 years ago, adult survival on that unit was 71%, which is abysmal. Adult deer survival. And more than 50% of that was due to lions, about 70%. Last year, adult survival was 72%, still abysmal. This year, it's at 91% right now. So it appears, I mean, we still have part of the year left, but they've made it through the winter with relatively high survival, suggesting that we are having an effect. And so I'm not advocating one way or the other, but that's a more complete story of what's happening on the deer herd there.
Other comments? Yeah.
Yeah, it was never brought up, really, but it seems to me that this last winter and spring, as has been indicated by Jason, has been truly catastrophic in a lot of ways, not just to bear, but to a lot of things, and we'll probably find ourselves in a fire season again this year. But my point is that I think that should give us pause and at least make us hesitate on moving ahead with things where we're not really sure what's going to happen in the near future. And so even though it's a 3-year period that we're looking at, I just always hedge on the side of caution then rather than aggression. So that I just say that.
Thanks, Dan. Ken?
I understand what you're saying, but Dan, but I still think I look at the projections that the division has, and I believe what they're doing is correct, that our lion population continues to increase. And so I don't know is that we're really worried about, I think they know what they're doing when they say this stuff, and I'm not holding back on trying to be too cautious.
Right. My response to that is that there's a huge difference between, you know, four 2-year-old Toms and one 6-year-old Tom. Huge difference. And that biologically also. I mean, probably one of the largest predators of cougar are cougar. And so that has some value, social value to the whole population. So that's why I say, you know, I'm just a little bit cautious that way.
Go ahead, Ben. Was there somebody else? I have a couple comments, but go ahead.
I'm with Ken on this one. I'm not too concerned about an over-harvest over 3 years. Again, not concerned. I'm looking back here at our graph. Kev's wrong on the 20-year history, but it's closer to 15. But I mean, our population is at an all-time high, as far as I can tell off of that graph. If over 3 years we over-harvest a little bit, is not going to decimate it. And as Darren alluded to earlier, cats are very resilient in bouncing back. So I'm gonna reach back several years ago, back when Mr. John Bear was, but prior to his rack experience, and showed up to a meeting and was discussing elk and made the comment that if we kill too many, we'll just grow more. And I think that comment applies very much to this right here.
Very good, Riley. I have a question. I didn't think that CWD was in Utah or Wasatch County. I thought it was along the South Manti in the La Salles and in extreme northeastern Utah. I didn't think it was here.
We haven't found it yet in either one of those counties. I've been on the phone back there after that comment talking with our state vet, and we have not. We've had a pretty extensive sampling effort along all of those counties, not only with Hunter Harvest, but with Roadkill, and have sampled hundreds of animals over the last few years, enough to detect 1% prevalence, and we have not found it in those counties. So
the CDC uses the state's information, I think.
So speaking to CWD a little bit, we've had the opportunity to collaborate with multi-state and Canadian provinces on multiple CWD studies. It is a serious and interesting effort that's taken place. Utah right now has it in about 3 or 4 spots at 1% prevalence. We were able to go to Colorado and have join up in a study with Colorado, Montana, Wyoming, South Dakota, Alberta, and a bunch of different states where they are seeing it at upwards of 25 to 28, some places as high as 45% prevalence. So it is increasing in places. It is an interesting thought that we're working towards, but as far as the data that we collect towards 1% prevalence, we've not seen it in those counties. San Pete County, towards Vernal, out towards the La Salle Mountains, but not yet in Wasatch and Utah counties.
Sure.
Okay. The CDC is very clear on the counties in Utah that are affected. It's a point in time. We're on a trajectory. And how steep that trajectory is going forward, we don't know. I've observed the Ebola outbreak, I've observed the HIV situation, I've observed the mad cow disease. I'm well aware of the disease course. We don't know where we are.
So thank you. So actually, I'm helping write the CWD management plan. And so I've looked at all the literature that's out there related to wildlife populations. And the number one effective thing for reducing CWD is having male-biased harvests, because it's twice as common in males as it is in females. And if you have a male-biased harvest that's significant, it'll keep it between 1% and 3%. You can't get rid of it. And so that's what we're seeing. We already have a strong male-biased harvest in this state, and we're key seeing it's been here 15 or 20 years now, and it's still sitting at 1% in those units.
And so, I mean, I think you're right. It could go, but they're monitoring it. I know that Annette's monitoring it really close, the state vet. So I've read some of that literature. Definitely that's true for pursuing predators. It's not as true for ambush predators, which is what cats are. That is true for pursuing predators like coyotes and wolves. It's not as true for ambush predators like lions. They take what's available on the landscape much more than a pursuing predator, and we don't have wolves here. But I'm not arguing one way or another. I'm trying to give you what I understand too. So the other comment I have is, many of you said against the plan. I'm a little concerned about that. The state is mandated by law to manage to the management plan. And so to me, a lot of the comments that were here should be going into the cougar management plan that's coming up in the next year, because they're bound by law to manage to the plan that's on the book. I mean, is that correct, Darren?
Sorry, just maybe to speak to that for a minute. The Western Association for Fish and Wildlife Agencies is actually currently revising the cougar management guidelines, and that will take into account all the latest literature and research, you know, up to present. And so my goal would be, once that is available, it looks like that ought to be available within the next year or so, that we ought to take a look at our plan and see if, you know, what, if anything, we need to incorporate from that new document into our plan. So that's kind of just timeline-wise, you know, that's probably what we're looking at.
Excellent. Thank you. Danny.
Darren, don't go away. So, hey, I really appreciate the one slide that you included demonstrating, you know, depredation costs. We need to do the exact same thing with cougar people conflicts. We need to keep track of those numbers. I think the public, that some of these people are referring to, the public that isn't here, right. The public wants to see that stuff. It's the stuff on the TV set that they want to know, that the management plan is going to reduce their cat in the backyard being eaten by a cougar. Right. You know, that's right. Kind of the, I think if you add that slide and go back and get that, I think that information is available. Right. I think that would really help the public too.
We have that, and I probably can't quantify it, but I can tell you that this region in particular was scrambling last year to take, just addressing dispersing juvenile males showing up in urban areas and catching them and moving them.
Her and other people's point. Yeah, right, yeah.
Other comments from the rack?
I just have one.
Sure.
I too want to thank the DWR for all that they do, and to assume that they are out of touch or disconnected with the cougar populations or with the deer populations or with chronic wasting disease is the height of arrogance. I think this group of professionals does a very, very good job. I think they're on top of their game, and I think they understand very well what the biology is and also what the potential for CWD is out there. As far as cougars in the population in populated areas, down in Sanpete County, we're not particularly populated, but there's quite often we so appreciate the young female cougar that'll come in and eat a whole bunch of cats, house cats. I'm just saying.
Love it, man.
Thank you. Other comments? So from my notes, the topics that were brought up repeatedly that were consistent with the plan, as I understand it, were the South Manti. I heard a comment to not increase the Southeast Manti. I heard a comment to support the Southwest Manti. I heard a comment to increase the Southwest Manti back to where it was, to 18. I also heard a comment from both the Houndsman and the SFW to keep it a split unit. Does somebody want to address? Yeah, Ken.
I'll make a motion on that. I'll make a motion that we leave the permits at 18 and that we take the Southwest Manti and make it, change it back or leave it as a split entry.
There's a motion. You second it. Ben seconds. Any discussion on that? So the motion is that they keep the Southwest Manti at 18 tags rather than decreasing it to 15 and leave the unit as a split unit rather than changing to limited entry. Is that correct, Ken?
I'm sorry, Brock. I misunderstood the motion. I need to withdraw my second on that. I thought the motion was to go with the division's recommendation on numbers and make it a split.
So that was the compromise that some people had talked about, is to leave it split and leave the recommendation of 15 the same. So you've withdrawn your second.
Ken, I apologize. That's what I thought you were suggesting.
I understand that. I'm just concerned with the issue we had last year, and I'm still not so sure that we don't have it this year.
And I understand your concern there. I had the same concern coming in tonight, but after hearing Brock and Rusty speak to that, I'm more comfortable with the recommendation, but I do like the compromise of leaving it a split. So
there's still a motion on the table. Is there a second or not? Motion dies. I would be willing to consider another motion.
I'll make the motion that we go with the compromise of the permits as recommended with the split season.
Okay. Second that. 10 seconds. Any discussion on that? All in favor?
We'll make sure that.
So the motion is that the unit remains split and that the tags, it does not go to limited entry, which is against the division recommendation, but the tags remain the same as the recommendation at 15. Is that correct? Okay. So Ben made the motion and Ken seconded it. All in favor? Opposed? 8-1. Okay.
And then I would like to make the motion to support the Utah Houndsmen's Association to not support that two-tag increase on the Central Mountains and Southeast Manti. Feet on the ground.
So you're making a motion on Southeast to not increase by two, but keep it same.
And keep them the same.
Is there a second for Danny's motion?
This is in alignment with the UHA recommendation.
That's why I'm making the motion. Just got to support somebody attending these racks.
It appears the motion dies. Okay. The other one I have here is Ochre Stansbury East. 8 tags is too many. Does anybody want to address that or not? Ken.
I think that with the loss we had, the sheep, of course that was right at the first, but being a new sheep unit, new herd in there, I think we need to leave the tags at 8. And I would like to make a there's no recommendation, but I would like to see the tags stay as the division proposed.
That was my question, I'm not sure who should address that, but
is east the Ochres?
Well, there's the Ochre, yeah, the east and the west.
Yeah, so east is the Ochres, so that's on the east side of Tooele. There are no sheep. The other would be the Stansbury's where we have sheep. Is that correct? Okay.
Well, I just see the Stansbury Ochre.
Yeah.
So which is the sheep unit?
The west.
The west.
Ochre Stansbury West?
Yes.
Where does that fall on our sheet? Oh, up here, 18B, way up high.
Darren, how many tags were on the Ochre West? How many are you recommending?
There's a recommendation for a 4 increase from 4 to 8, it looks like, on our sheet. This is that second.
We did have some sheep mortality. We removed a couple of lines. The plan will only allow up to 100% increase, so we're going from 4 to 8 on the sheep unit. The Kennecott in the Ochre property, that's what Corey's talking about.
So you're recommending the maximum increase you can recommend.
The sheep.
On the sheep,
yeah, under the plan, right.
SFW asked for more. and given the situation with the sheep on there, I'm
How much did we spend on transplanting 20 sheep out there?
It's not cheap. And I'm leaning towards supporting SFW on that increase because I'm reading that the division went with the max recommendation they could. They can't recommend more than that. I don't know if, and so I'm not so sure if they wouldn't recommend more.
I'm kind of a fan of following the plans that keeps us safe.
But I understand
that's a
that.
Personal opinion.
Are we allowed to go outside of what their plans are?
We're allowed to make recommendations.
Do whatever we want
that
in that way.
It doesn't mean the Wildlife Board's going to accept it, but sure. We can make recommendations. So,
Well, Brock, Ken, you had originally started addressing the Oak or Stansbury East, but I think that was
meant to be the West.
Meant for the sheep. Okay. I would make the motion that we accept SFW's recommendation to increase to 12, and explanation of why is I'm concerned about the sheep out there. We in a few months, we lost 25% of that herd, and sheep are expensive.
I'll second that, Brock, on the same situation. When you lose 25% and the cost that we spent to get those sheep here, we can't afford to lose any more.
Any discussion with that? Okay, all in favor? Opposed? Passes 3-6. 6-3. Okay. So, yeah, so the motion is to increase the tags to 16 instead of to 12 instead of 8 on the Oak or Stansbury West. That motion passed 6-3.
Who was that was opposed?
It was me, Eric. Oh, he's saying I can't vote, so it's not me. So it's there you go. I'm a dope. There you go. I'm a tiebreaker. I never have to vote. Good. Second mistake. I'm slow, buddy. It may take me a year. Okay. Excellent. The next one down my list of comments that I heard was to keep the cash at 25 instead of 23. Instead of 22. So they proposed a decrease of 3 to 22, and somebody in the audience had commented to keep it at 25. The SFW, I believe, made that comment. Is there any...
I think with the deer population that we have up there in the cache, I think we need to keep it at 25. So I would make the proposal that we keep it at 25 on the cache.
Let me comment on that if I can. I should have been more prepared for this. So I went and looked at the data because Steve Sorensen from up in the cache called me about this issue. And the population size of deer since 2013 has grown from 15,300 to 20,800. That's with two extraordinarily heavy winters in the midst there. They're currently at 83% of their objective. So to go under predator management, I believe they have to be at 75% of objective. And so the population is increasing, and it's above where it is at objective to fall under predator management. I'm not going to vote on this. I'm just giving you more information on what's happening with the deer herd there.
Brock, I appreciate that information. You've got a student with a study up there right now, right?
That's correct.
So I know there's been a couple winters where we've heard that the fawn survival rate has just been horrendous up there.
So last year we lost 60% of the fawns. About 70% of that was to predation. Half of those were to lion. This year it's not as high yet. We've lost like 35% of the fawns right now.
So I'm just trying to reconcile the low fawn survival with an increase in population.
What does it say?
Last year was 0% fawn survival.
So that's true. That's true, but it was 60% survival until winter got the last 40%. So yeah, you're right. It went to zero, but most of it was a big chunk of that was winter, not lions.
So the last 4 years, it's an average of 27%.
Because that's correct. Because two of those years there was a complete winter kill. Yep.
So Brock, I mean, you're a deer biologist. Help me understand. Help me reconcile this. Fawn survival rate in the 20% and we're growing deer. I'd help me understand.
That's the division's numbers. I pulled those off the division's big game numbers.
No, I'm not questioning the numbers. I'm just, how was that happening? That's my question.
So it wasn't a consistent growth, Ben. What it shows is 15,000, 17,000, 19,000, 18,000, 17,000, 20,000. So the winners do knock it down. And we've been able to show that when the population's below, predator control can enhance fawn survival. Mm-hmm. And when the population is not in good shape, it does nothing. But when the population's below carrying capacity, it can have an effect.
So where are we now in that curve? Population curve?
So it's at 83% of the population objective. It's hard to say where we are on nutritional carrying capacity because last year was such a dry year. The deer were in poor shape last year.
Yeah.
So this year they're doing really well right now. So I believe, so where were, did you make a motion?
Made a motion that we move it to 26 on the cash. 25?
Keep it at 25 instead of going with the division's recommendation to change it to 22?
Yes.
Darren, can we bring up the recommendation on that? I want to see where we lie in the various components on that recommendation.
On the cash is not meeting the females in the harvest criteria. The only option in the plan, if you want to stick with the plan, is to decrease permits. It doesn't say may decrease, it says decrease.
And that's because we're
over 40%. It's not under predator management, doesn't qualify.
And we're over 40%.
And you're at,
we've got 44% harvest.
The last 3 years.
With a 13% 5 years or older.
I'm torn on this one because I realize I went outside of the plan on the ochres, but I feel that's a special exception with the sheep.
So I believe Ken has a motion and it's hanging right now.
You know, I think it deserves a vote, so I'll go ahead and give it a second.
Okay, there's a second. Any discussion? So the motion is to keep the tags on the cash unit at 25 rather than following the recommendation to reduce them to 22. 23. Okay. 23.
Sorry,
my fault. I think you led me the other way. Okay. Any discussion? In favor? Opposed? Motion fails 5-3. Scott.
If you've got eyes like mine, that won't help you a little.
Excellent.
Okay, just a minute. Danny Scott. Who else opposed? Eric and AJ. Okay.
Other comments were unsustainable harvest. Again, I think that's one that needs to be addressed in the Cougar Management Plan. My personal opinion, but if somebody wants to address it, they can here. That's all I have that's consistent with the plan. Is there any other comment or? Yeah, Ben.
Motion to accept the balance as presented.
Yeah, I'll second that.
Okay. Motion to accept the balance of the recommendations. Any discussion? All in favor? Unanimous. That is all I have. I appreciate the comments, and I strongly encourage people that were making recommendations to get involved in the Cougar Management Plan next year as it's rewritten. So that's what the state's bound by managing to, and we try to support those plans. We go through a really strong public process to write those plans. And we try to have every stakeholder in the room when those plans are being written. And they really guide the decisions we make. So if there are things that aren't happening that you think should be happening, I encourage you to get involved with the creation of those management plans.
Brooke?
Yeah.
Question on that. I may be wrong, but I thought this plan was a 10-year plan written in 2015. What am I missing?
So I think you're missing that WAF was coming out with guidelines all based on the latest science, and if those are significantly different, then, well, I'll let Darren respond.
Yeah, but just the only thing I'd add to that is that there is a 5-year review period in there.
Okay.
So 2020 would be the year, but with this document just hitting the street at about the same time, I'd like to see that hit the street first and then take a look at it.
So are you anticipating a rewrite of the plan, or depends on what we
it'll
see?
So we're part of the process. You know, we're looking at the research chapter, but I don't know yet. We'll see what the other chapters say and kind of what happens there. So.
Okay. Thanks, Darren.
The other thing I'd like to say is I really appreciate everybody showing up tonight and commenting. I think it's nice that we get people coming that care about wildlife in the state. It's important to me, and I'm sure it's important to everybody up here and the people that are sitting in the back of the room as well. So thank you very much. Is there anything else?
No.
Meeting adjourned.